It's been a while since I recorded a fresh new podcast. We'd taken a pause in our Perek Shiro travels for the Omer, and then due to circumstances over the last month or so, since Shavuos, I did not really have the chance, which leads me to say that I want to dedicate today's podcast, number 126, to my late father, Hareini Kaporas Mishkovoi. This will be for his Shloshim, which is this is Erev Shabbos of Shlach Lecho. It's going to be on Sunday night. On Monday during the day will be the end of the Shloshim. So I want to take up the reins from where we were at in Perek Shira and connect it, talk about my father a little bit at the same time. The irony is, as you'll hear, he was such a tsunua, such a modest, understated person that he wouldn't want us saying tons of things about him. This is actually the second take. I tried to record this, and actually for the first time in 125 previous episodes, that no audio came out. So almost as if there's some kind of sign. But nevertheless, I will do my best. The song of the date palm in Perek Shiro, we know what every element of nature sings out, speaks out what its essence is. We've spoken about the pomegranate, but now it's the turn of the tomor, of the date palm. And unsurprisingly, its posuk, its words, are the famous words that we say or sing in shul. Tzadik katomor yifroch, ke'erez balavonon yizkeh, which means the righteous one, the tzadik, will flourish, will flower like the date palm, and will bloom like, or grow, flourish like the cedar of Lebanon. If you've ever seen the cedars of Lebanon, you go to Kew Gardens, you actually get a sight of really how impressive they are. Those two trees are put together in this pasuk. The commentaries explain because they are two representative, they're two of the very highest types of trees. They're tall, they're impressive, they're strong. They have a certain bearing, a certain nobility. With regards to the tomor, or the date palm itself, it is one of the Shivas Haminim. It's one of the seven fruits of the land of Israel, and it's also one of the Arba Minim, one of the four that we bring on Sukkos, that we shake. The lulav is from the date palm. It's the only one which is common to both. To be a member of either set would be special. To be a member of both is unique. I thought it interesting that this week's Sedra, Shalach Lecha, although when you hear this, it might already be Korach, and that we will talk about that as well. The spies brought back fruits. They didn't bring back the wheat or the barley or the olives because they're not the sweetness. They don't represent the sweetness. They represent either the savory or the bitterness. The tomor, or the date palm, is the date fruit is the only one that the spies didn't bring back of those which are sweet. And I wonder if that is quite telling. The Medrash Lekach Tov does point out this and says that that's the honey that is referred to by the Meraglim, by the spies. Eretz Zovas Chalav Udvash, a land flowing with milk and honey, is the honey of the date palm. But yet they didn't bring back an example of that, as if it was untainted by what they did. If you look further at what the date palm is, the date palm has a crown on it. Chazal explained that the foliage on top appears like a crown. Now we know that when we speak about crowns, obviously you think of a king. There are reasons why the crown is representative of that. It's something, a real king, a real melech. The crown points upwards to know who the real king is. We say in Pirkei Avos that there are three crowns which a person could have: the crown of kahuna, priesthood; the crown of malchus, of kingship, which David is an example; and the crown of Torah, the keser Torah. However, keser shem tov, the crown of a good name, Oila Gaben is above all someone who has a good name, someone who is known for their honesty, for their uprightness. That is supreme. That is the highest form. Keser, Shem Tov. That is something that we heard. We knew about our father, Hareini Kaparas Mishkovo. But it's something that we heard more and more and more about during the Shiva, about how people phoning in, people writing in, saying that his words was as good as a contract. There was no even thought of something which could smack of something untowards. Keser Shem Tov, he was known to be that honest. And with that, he just commanded respect. He didn't demand it, he just commanded it. And of course, that is the healthy way of looking at it because of, as we're going to see, there being no ego with him. If you see where Korach went wrong in next week's Sedra, or this week if you're listening already in Parshas Korach, Korach, who comes from the word kereach, which means to have a bald crown, is someone who tried to force the respect onto himself, tried to demand the respect, even though, as we might get to discuss, he may have had the good intentions. But when you try and force it on, it's ersatz, it's fake. It's got to be done with modesty. It's got to be understated. That's what our father was like. Katomar, Tzadik Katomar Ivrach, the Tomar in Tanakh, in Chumash, Tomar along with Rivka is seen as one who was modest, was tsonua, even though sometimes the act that somebody can do may belie something else. She actually had a real modesty, say Chazal. That Katomar, the Mefarshim, the commentaries explain, is the gematria of Seser, which means concealed, understated. It's Hashem who, the more you try and understand him, the more you see how great and how humble he is, so to speak. Yoshev b'Seser Elyon, which we said obviously by the Leviah, he dwells in concealment above. Seser is Katomar. The counterpart is the Erez, which of course is the cedar tree, as we've said. The Mefarshim explain Erez is the gematria of Yitzchok. Of course, he was Rabbi Yehuda Aryeh ben Rabbi Yitzchok Meir. If there was anyone who, as my sister Leah put it, he had his lack of ego, gave us the space to be and to become, he was ben Yitzchok Meir, Rabbi Yehuda Aryeh ben Rabbi Yitzchok Meir. He had ownership of that total lack of ego. When the Zohar tells us that Yitzchok's ashes are still up there in Har HaMoriah, you're puzzled at first, because in my Chumash and in yours, I'm pretty certain it says that he came down Har HaMoriah. Avraham Avinu, his father, did not shecht him. He didn't kill him. So what does it mean that his ashes are still up there at the Arkad on the Mizbeach? So we understand, and the Mefarshim explain, that there was a part of him which left him forever. And that was his ego, the self. There was nothing of his self. It was all about other people. And anyone who knew our father would know it was all about other people, not because he didn't have self-esteem. In fact, probably specifically because he had self-esteem. He understood that everything was for the other. There was nothing in his ego. There was no ego. He was beyond ego. Where Korach went wrong is where he got sucked into the problem of kinah, of jealousy, of kovod, of these things, which took him out of the world. Notwithstanding the fact that the Briskarov said that Korach was a heretic, was a kofer, Abikoros, once he went off, the Chozer of Lublin refers to Korach as the Saba Kadisha, the holy Zeda, the holy grandfather. In essence, they're not necessarily arguing that much. If you look at the Medrash Osis to Rabbi Akiva, you might be familiar that the Medrash in Chumash tells us that Korach was meant to be the Levi Godoil, not the Kohen Godoil. But the Medrash Osis to Rabbi Akiva tells us that one day, at the end of time, when Mashiach is here, he will be the Kohen Godoil, for reasons that maybe we'll discuss another time. Once the lessons are learned, that there is something called not having an ego. The greatness of Korach, what he could have been and what he will once be, is something that certainly needs an explanation. we understand that when everything's revealed in retrospect, Chazal tell us that tzaddik katamar yifroch, when there's tichias amesim, the end of things, the end of the words, tzaddik katamar yifroch, of our posuk here, hakuf resh ches, which spells koirach. These are not my words. These are what the commentaries tell us. To get rid of your ego, it's called in the Sfarim, it's called bitul hayesh, getting rid of the yesh, of the me-ness that there is. And that, of course, is very difficult in 20th and 21st century Western society. The biggest task I saw written somewhere is to take the yesh me'ayin, the ex nihilo, the something out of nothing with which Hashem created the world, and go back to a yesh le'ayin, to say that my essence is nothing because Hashem is everything. It's a difficult thing to do. But let's take the date palm one stage deeper, because after all, it is this posuk, and we are discussing the song of the date palm. And they explain that the word tamar is a contraction of two words, tam and mar, which means tam, which means perfect, unblemished, and mar, which means bitter, which is an interesting idea. The date is definitely not something which is bitter. Well, that's when it's ripe. Before it's ripe, it is bitter, and the other parts of it are perhaps slightly bitter too. We know that in any process, if you're trying to get rid of your own ego, it's a painful thing to do. We say no pain, no gain. It's not a thing. I don't want to lose myself, my selfness. That's a painful thing. But if you are able to let go, if you are able to say that all the talents that I have, they're not mine, they were given to me by Hashem, who is everything, that again is beyond ego. That actually gives you the real you, ironically. The process, as we said, seems bitter. In fact, even the end process, the end of the process, Mashiach himself, at the end of days where all of this will be revealed, Mashiach is born from a very, very strange process involving, yes, someone called Tamar. And amazingly, and Chazal say this again and again, they talk about the fact that hidden within this process is the actual, the messianic process, the idea that the great, great Mashiach is found in something which seems so bitter and seems so incongruous with what really is going on. The first reference to Mashiach that there is in Chumash is in right at the beginning of Bereishis, the Ruach Elokim Rachefes al Pnei Amoyim. After the four exiles are referred to, the spirit of Hashem is hovering on the water. Ruach Elokim, say Chazal, this is the spirit of Mashiach. This is the Ruach Elokim, the Ruach Hashem. The Ruach Hashem, which they also explain, is the gematria of Mar. The gematria of 240 is the gematria of bitterness. The process is bitter, but at the end, when you see that Hashem was not being cruel, he was being rachum v'chanun, those eyes, the things which show the mercy, which show the gift that he gave us to improve ourselves, that rachum v'chanun Hashem, rachum v'chanun is 400. You add that to the mar, and you have tamar. These are not my words. These are things that the Chazal say, no pain, no gain. The Ruach Elokim, the Ruach Hashem, those are represented, those are the human representatives of the Tzelem Elokim, the imitato Deo, the image of Hashem, which is the Tzelem Elokim, which I said at the Levaya is actually numerically equivalent to Yehuda Aryeh, our father's name. Ze Hashem kivinu loy, we say when we aspire, when we hope for Mashiach, when we hope for Hashem to redeem us, we say those words, Zeh Hashem Kivinu Loi. Again, Yehuda Aryeh, our father, Areini Kaparas Mishkovoi, same gematria. Again, the spiritual DNA is there in the words and the letters. The fact that the Tamar, the date palm, is comparable with compared to so many great people. Here's just a short list. I was looking through references in Midrashim and Gemaras. We've mentioned Yitzchak. We've mentioned Tamar herself, obviously. Rivka, who is mentioned together with Tamar in terms of being Tsanua. Moshe, Aaron, they are both referenced in Midrashim to do with Tamar. David, Moshiach, Talmid Chachamim, sages generally, and Am Yisrael, the whole Jewish people. What is this again and again? It's interesting that when the Zakenim, the 70 elders, are appointed, one of the references is in a place where there are 70 date palms. The 70 date palms corresponds to those 70 elders. What's the identification of these leaders, these tall, strong, so many of them are tall. It doesn't mean you have to be tall. Yes, our father was a tall man, but it's not, there seems to be something about those, Sho'ol HaMelech, for example, who's called head and shoulders above others, above all others. Something about that, there's a certain nobility, the tall bearing, metaphorically, if it's not a literal thing. I also notice that if you know your Nach and you see that after the time of Gidon, the judge, Gidon himself had 70 sons. Actually, he had 72. 71 were one of them was called Avimelech, and he went and killed 70 of his brothers. He wanted to get rid of the competition. One escaped of his half-brothers, and that was Yosam. Not an accident that his name is so similar to the word Yosam Yatom, which means an orphan. And again, speaking in this situation is quite appropriate. But when Yosam, just before he flees, he stands up and he gives a parable and a curse to Avimelech for having committed such a terrible crime, a terrible murder, not the only time that you find 70 people being murdered in Mongo. You see it later with Achav and Izebel, also connected with fruit and vineyards and, you know, lots of things associated with that. He stands up and he compares each of the trees to one of the judges, one of them being Othniel ben Kenaz. Interestingly, the first of the judges, who is also, it says Ruach Hashem, but and he compares each one to one of the trees and eventually the thorn bush to Avimelech, this murderer. But once again, like with the spies, there's one tree that doesn't seem to get a mention, as if it kind of doesn't want to enter the fray, doesn't want to enter the machlokes, and that's the date palm. It remains its sweetness without being involved. Again, what we heard from our father on his last day, when he should have been unconscious, again and again, he was talking about don't enter machlokes, don't get into machlokes. The things that you see with the meraglim in this week's Sedra, things you see with Kairach, stay away from it, stay the sweet nature. It's not about demanding the keser shame type. It happened to him because he stayed away from machlokes and not because he had this low self-esteem, but because he knew it was the right thing to stay away from. The Medrash in Bamidbar tells us that, as we were indicating before, that the date palm has almost unique virtue, that every part of the tree has a use. None of it is wasted. Either it's for food purposes, or it's for mitzvah purposes, for shaking lulav, or it's for shade purposes, whatever it might be. Every single part of it is useful. And that is Klal Yisrael. The Jewish people, whatever you do, whatever you are up to, you might think, "Ah, oh, what am I? I'm a nothing." No, you're not a nothing. The Jewish people are compared to a date palm, and this is beautiful. And this we thought of when we named our youngest daughter Tamar Rivka, actually, and for various reasons. But the Gemara says, and we sang this a lot after she was born, "Ma Tamar ein lo ela lev echad," just as the date palm only has one heart of palm, if you like. The Jewish people also only have one heart, to their Father in heaven. There's an achdus, there's a unity. Everyone has a role. We're unified, one purpose. Daddy, you had the wisdom. But more than that, liboy lev zohov, both those phrases are, again, the gematria of your name. Toiv meitiv, b'chol lev. In the end, it was your heart that failed, but it was the Kotzker Rebbe who said that there is nothing more whole than a broken heart.